Hello and welcome to Homestead Hens and Honey, a beekeeping, chicken keeping, and general homesteading podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and this week I will be talking to you about the birds and the bees. No, not in the euphemism way. I'm going to be talking about picking up my 3-pound package of bees and getting them all settled into their new hive during a very nasty weather day. And then I have some information about mallard ducks and my little chaos sprites, aka chickens. So first things first, I always try not to speak too quickly or rush through these episodes. I might be a little frantic today because I'm again recording the day before release, and right when I was planning my day, I found a leak in the ceiling of my downstairs bathroom, which is never a good thing. I was able to get someone out. It was a relatively easy fix, but it's kind of thrown my whole day off balance, and it's not going to be the super productive day that I was hoping for. Funnily enough, right after I noticed the leak and called for someone to come out, I went out to check on the water in the coops. And Cracker, my white leghorn, you know, queen bitch of the flock, managed to slip by me and go exploring. She is impossible to catch, so I had to lure her back with the big guns. And by that I mean bread. I have not yet met a chicken who doesn't go absolutely bonkers for some bread. So I went into the run with the others and I just started feeding them little crumbles of bread. She immediately noticed that they were enjoying something she wasn't, came running back, and got her treat. So thankfully that crisis was averted because I'm not ready for them to be free roaming just yet. But once again, proving my point that chickens are chaos sprites. Some quick personal updates. I missed last week's episode, for which I apologize for again. That was because, as I mentioned on Instagram, I was sick. I have no idea what was wrong with me, probably some kind of virus. I basically slept for almost a week. I would just wake up to eat, do absolutely necessary animal chores, and then I would go back to sleep. I just had no energy, and I really could just like champion sleep that whole week. But as of Sunday, I'm doing better. I have more energy, particularly with the sun coming out. So I have been throwing myself into the garden to try and catch up with mowing and weeding and getting things planted. This week I was able to get some seeds in the ground. So I was able to sow seeds for cosmos flowers, sunflowers, cucumber, California poppies, white clove, a couple of others that I can't remember. I also was given some daylilies by a neighbor, so I managed to, you know, dig up a space for them, get them situated and happy. And right now what I have left to do is I need to get chicken manure and topsoil down on the veggie beds so that I can get my corn, pumpkin and squash planted. And then I will be working on my raised beds, which will hopefully be done within the next couple of days. I'm really excited to see what they look like when they're fully assembled. Once I have them together, I can start figuring out, you know, what exactly I want in there. So far, I know that I'm going to get tomatoes, a couple of different types, bell peppers, basil, oregano, and probably a handful of other things. I have a like laddered container bed or garden that I have up on my deck right now, which I also put together, and that's going to be my herb and cut flower garden for the year. So I'm really excited to get that going as well. What else? Oh, I rescued this really sad looking blueberry plant, but I'm not sure if it's going to make it. Right now it's really hanging on by a thread and we probably won't get any fruit from it this year, but I'm not quite ready to give up on it just yet. The lilac bush that I had transplanted from one side of the property to the bed that I had updated last year didn't handle the move well. So it's died back, but it is sending up little shoots at the base, so it's not dead. And so I did a little bit of reading and the recommendation is just to cut it back, and hope that it rallies and then will return next spring. So that's what I've been doing. The remaining lilac bush on the side of the property is blooming, and I've been bringing the flowers in because that smell is just pure spring. It's just beautiful. All three of my peony plants are starting to bloom. Even my poor little transplanted one that had a, like, got ripped out when they came out to do our generator install. And the new one that I got last year when it was still quite small, they're all three of them are going and they're all sending up buds. So I'm really, really excited to see what happens there. I think I picked up some different colours. So fingers crossed, I will have some really beautiful flowers to bring inside. I really love peonies, so I'm very excited. It's sort of generally, like, as I've been working in the garden, it feels different this year. And there's always that sense of urgency to actually get things sorted and to get the plants in the ground because I want to have a harvest. And knowing that last year I was too late for everything and I really got kind of a sad harvest, I am worried about it. There is that sense of urgency. But also, I have to admit, this year there's just less stress and a lot more gratitude. I think at this point with the homestead, I'm starting to see how things are really coming together, how previous work that I've put in is now paying off. So for instance, with like mulching the beds, there were so few weeds that came up, like much, much less than what I've struggled with before. How I've got more wildflowers coming up in the lawn because of like structuring my mowing to give them a chance to get situated. How like the weeding I've done before is paying off because, like I said, there's less weeds now. And then just sort of things that I planted that were, when they were young, weren't super impressive, but are now sort of coming into maturity and really giving like a beautiful look to all my gardens. So I'm feeling very fortunate about that. Of course, it's not perfect. It never is. It's a living being, my own little ecosystem here that I'm trying to keep healthy and add to and tame as much as I can. I really want it to be sort of a wild country garden. And, you know, I've got the mint, obviously, is everywhere and just beautiful and fragrant, and it makes working in the beds really pleasant. So fingers crossed that this kind of sense of intense gratitude continues, because it's making things just so pleasant and much easier for me to get out and do the work. In some animal news, before I get to the main topic, one of my female pink tongue skinks, Callisto, finally gave birth. She gave birth on Tuesday of this week. And this is the one who has been so huge and unhappy looking that I was absolutely positive she'd be the first one to pop. But instead, her mother, Pandora, surprised us by going first with her 13 babies, who are, by the way, doing really, really well and will be ready to sell very soon. This is a first time breeding for Callisto, so I was getting a little anxious as it was dragging on. You know, she hadn't been eating for weeks. Some of the early signs of labor in this species is that they will defecate a lot, I think when the contractions begin. So usually you'll see 1 to 3 separate defecations in the 24 hours before they start giving birth. Hers was like 48 hours before. She started early on the Tuesday morning and she was in labor through the day to about 4 p.m. That's quite long. My other females, for all my other litters, they usually give birth over a period of like a few hours. And then sometimes they'll have a couple of extras later on. But this sort of sustained labor I haven't seen before. What was really good about it, aside from the fact that, you know, things seem to go really well and the baby seemed to be healthy and mama seems to be healthy, is that we actually got to see twins being born, which, as far as I know, we haven't had before. So we saw them come out together in the same birth sac and they were sharing a placenta. And it was funny to watch them because these babies come out, they break through their birth sac, and they are immediately ready to go. And one of the first things that they do is they eat what's left of the sac on them, and then they eat the placenta. So these two babies are joined by a placenta, and they're trying to move away, and they can't because they're basically attached to their sibling. So they were like struggling a little bit, and like getting, you could see them getting cranky, and they bit each other just a tiny bit, and you could see them try to figure it out. And finally, one of them broke free of the placenta, and the other one turned around and started eating the placenta. And later on, I checked on them, and both were separate, looking good. They are much smaller than the other babies, which isn't super surprising. I will be keeping a closer eye on them, though, just to make sure that they don't get bullied around the food as they're all growing together. Previously, I've had the occasional runty baby, and they tend to catch up with their siblings within the first few months. So I'm optimistic that my twins will be okay. But obviously, they're of the most concern because they're just so little. I mean, this is already, they have very small babies, and these are even smaller. So I'm keeping a really close eye on them. And I don't know, maybe they'll be the two that I keep back and don't sell. So we'll have to see. But now that I have two litters on the ground, one that's almost ready to go, I'm going to start reaching out to my customers and just letting them know what's available. And then hopefully I can get the first litter of 13 babies sold. And while I'm doing that, these 12 babies that were born on Tuesday will hopefully be getting big and strong and eating well and defecating and showing me that they're thriving. And then I can move on to find them homes as well. So feeling pretty good about it. I also am still waiting on two additional females who I'm not 100% sure if they took or not. They're both quite large and chunky, but maybe they're just fat. It's kind of hard to tell. So I'm just watching them. We'll see what happens. Okay, so the birds and the bees for this week. I'm going to start with bees because they're my favorite. So last Monday, so not this past Monday, but the Monday before, was finally pickup time for the 3-pound package of honeybees that I'd ordered with a marked New World Carniolan Queen from Queenright Colonies in Ohio. This is the place that I've always used when I get packages. I use them for some supplies as well. It's just a really good company, but, you know, great customer service, great products, wonderful bees. So I always order from them, and they're a little bit of a drive for me, but it's right out into the country, so even though it takes a little bit of planning, it's beautiful. I really like it. I like getting to see all the farmland that I pass, and, you know, I usually see deer and things like that, and it's just a nice drive. So the packages were a little later than usual this year, nothing major. We usually get them the second or third, we'll see that through the second, third, and fourth week of April, and these weren't ready for pickup until the 1st of May, so Beltane, which I hope is auspicious. I had heard some rumblings about delays, but this isn't a big deal. I did what I did last year, where I had asked them to treat with oxalic acid. I love that they offer this, and I definitely am glad to take advantage. I did break my streak of installing packages during snow flurries. So I think every other package install I've done, or at least the past like two or three of them, it was snowing when I had to install them. This time it was sleeting when I picked them up, but by the time I got home, it was just raining and very cold, like relatively close to freezing. So not great weather to do an install, but I have done worse. So I chose to put them into a Langstroth style hive instead of my top bar hive because I really wanted to have access to frames of eggs and brood for my other colonies, which have been very confusing and I don't know what's going on with. So I got them all set up. The install went really well. I put a feeder on top with dry sugar and then I wrapped the colony I wrapped the hive to give them some added warmth. One of the big things with packages is that even though there's a big can of syrup in with them, they usually use it up before they get to their destination. So they tend to be very, very hungry. And if they're trying to keep themselves warm, they're going to need the extra energy. So you want to feed them I had the dry sugar on because of the temperatures. It did warm up within a couple of days. I could take the dry sugar feeder off and I put in 1:1 sugar syrup with some Honey Bee Healthy in there to kind of stimulate them and get them going. So my first inspection, I did find the queen. They had released her. So she came in a cage, and when I did the install, I took the cork out and I put in a little candy plug. So the worker bees will eat through that candy plug and release the queen, ideally. But you always want to go in within like 3 to 4 days, make sure she has been released. And in this case, they ate all that candy. I mean, there was not even a tiny trace of it. So that was the first thing I checked. So I knew she was in the hive. It did take me a little while to find her, which was making me a bit panicked because of the bad luck that I've had with bees this year. But I did find her. She's a little small, which I'm slightly concerned about, but I've had small queens be little powerhouses, so hopefully that's not going to be an issue. And honestly, it was just so nice to be working with a full colony again, you know, opening that lid and they're just covering the frames and they're just kind of boiling out of the hive and they're so active and busy, and it was just wonderful. So very excited. I'm feeling very optimistic. I'm really looking forward to working with this colony. And I will say I am a little disappointed that I chose the Langstroth over the Top Bar Hive, because when I went into my other two colonies that I thought were swarm catchers, because I'd seen some smatterings of brood and eggs, if there were colonies there, they're gone now. The numbers of the workers have dropped. They're not pulling wax. They're not bringing in nectar or pollen. And the brood is old, and some of the brood died during the cold days. So those are just empty hives. I left them set up out there with some lemongrass oil, which supposedly can attract a swarm, because it's meant to smell kind of similar to the queen pheromones. The idea is that it lures in those scout bees who are looking for a new place to live. And there's been a lot of activity at almost all my hives, actually, with, you know, bees checking them out, but I don't think I've had any swarm catches yet. As I mentioned in a previous episode, my neighbor got way over his head with his colonies. He just expanded too fast. And I think he didn't really think about what it would mean to get through the winter with the majority of the colonies and like how much work it would be to split them or make nukes, you know. So he's had a lot of them swarming. So the chances of me maybe attracting a swarm this year are probably better than previous years, because his keeps swarming every week and he's been catching some of them, but some of them are getting away, so we'll have to see. I'm just sad because I love working the Top Bar Hive. I really, really wanted to see if this would be the year that I could get a colony really well established in there and get them through the winter. There's still a chance that it might attract a swarm. I could always keep an eye out for an additional package and do another install. But I kind of had a moment of weakness and I ended up ordering a nucleus colony of Saskatraz bees, because I just really, I don't know, my husband just said to me, why don't you just order a nuke? And I was like, oh, you know, I was waffling about it because of the price. But ultimately, I was like, yeah, I want more bees. Let's do this. And then I'll have two different colonies, two genetic lines to work with. Hopefully, I can still have a good year with my honeybees. What else? Oh, so I also got my oxalic acid vaporizer and a huge bag of oxalic acid. So I'm ready to go on my new scheduled treatment plan, where you treat every 2 months. Because the package has just been treated at the beginning of this month, you know, they won't be due for a little bit, but I'm all ready to go now. So I'm quite excited about that. And yeah, like I said, just feeling cautiously optimistic. So that's the bees. Let's talk about birds. And specifically, I wanted to talk about mallard ducks. If you follow my Instagram, you will see pictures of the mallard duck pair that visits us when we flood. So when our fenced-in back garden floods, which is every spring, they will come into our fenced area and just sort of hang out. And I think part of this is because usually they're in the swamp out the back, but they tend to attract other males who want to horn in on the female after she's already selected a male. And I think they figured out that the being in the fenced area was safer and was going to deter those other males for a little longer. Before I get ahead of myself, I used to think that mallard ducks were not a species. I thought mallard meant the males and that females were just called ducks or hens. This is completely wrong. Mallard ducks are a species. They're a species of dabbling duck. And the males are called drakes and the females are called hens. So there you go. You live and learn. I can't believe I'm almost 38 and it took me that long to realize this. Mallard ducks are probably the most common duck for many people. If you ask them, like, what does an archetypical duck look like? A lot of them will probably think of a mallard. This is because they are just, you know, hugely abundant across the Northern Hemisphere. So you can see them in many, many countries. They also live in a variety of different habitats. So they, you know, yes, you'll find them in urban areas, rural areas, by lakes, by small ponds. Apparently, they actually prefer water that isn't deeper than 3 foot, which I didn't realize. I thought that they would prefer deeper water. So that was interesting. And then you might know that this duck is quite territorial. So it's common to see them fighting, particularly at this time of year. So usually what happens is that pairing will happen in the fall or winter. So a hen chooses a drake to be her ducky husband. And what's interesting is that when they go together to seek out and then make a nest site, other drakes who have yet to pair up will then at this point start trying to get in on the mating business and steal that female away. And both the female and her chosen drake will fight off invaders. The hens can be almost as territorial as the drakes. And I got to see this play out because of this pair choosing to hang out in our garden. So it was just the pair to begin with, and then two additional drakes showed up, and there was some fighting between the males, but not a huge amount. Then one day there were 5 additional drakes, and this is when I saw both the hen and her chosen male fighting. And this was not just chasing, this was full on grabbing each other aggression. I actually saw the chosen male grab one of his rivals by a wing and then sort of swing and throw him about 2 feet. It was incredibly impressive. I've actually seen this maneuver with birds before, with sparrows, when sparrows are fighting at this time of year, also for mating rights. I've seen them grab each other by the wings and just toss each other, which is incredible. Never thought I would see it with a duck, considering how heavy bodied they are, but I got to witness it. So they'll fight and, you know, usually the chosen male will hopefully be triumphant and the other males will eventually kind of give up. Interestingly, once the female has actually found her nest site and chosen where she's going to lay, and then when she actually lays her eggs and is ready to incubate, the male then just goes, okay, I'm done here, and he leaves. So once he's sure that the eggs are on the ground, he just goes off and he'll actually join other drakes and they'll just sort of hang out together until it's time to pair up again in the fall or winter. Now, a clutch is commonly 8 to 13 eggs for this species, and the eggs are said to be like a creamy white to greenish buff colour. The incubation period is about 27 to 28 days, and then the ducklings will fledge at day 50 to 60. Ducklings are incredibly precocial, so they come out ready to go, but they also bond very closely with their mother. Well, they imprint might be a better way to say it, and they follow her around and they learn how to be ducks by following her. Sometimes late pairings can actually happen in the summer. If a female loses her clutch, like, you know, if something happens to the eggs or something happens to the ducklings, or just in general, she fails to raise her young, she might look for a drake and the two of them might attempt to kind of have a last minute clutch before the weather changes. Now, these ducks are kind of infamous for their aggressive mating behavior. So you might have heard things about how whole gangs of the drakes will chase and harass females until they're too weak to resist, and then they take turns mating with her. So I've often called this like ducky rape, and I've yelled at the ducks at the back like a crazy person when I've seen it happening to try and get them to leave her alone. I haven't seen it for a long time, thankfully, but I do find it upsetting. Part of why it's so upsetting is that people have seen that when this kind of thing happens and a female is getting mobbed by so many males, particularly when it's happening in water, sometimes they drown the hen. So she can die during this sort of gang rape situation. And then to make it worse, insult to injury, the drakes will copulate with her dead body. This has been like documented. There are actually papers about this. There's actually a paper about drakes that were fighting and one of them chased another one until it flew up and it hit a window and it broke its neck and died. And the drake who'd been chasing it then copulated with the dead drake's body. So they're kind of gross. And you might also be aware, if you're some kind of weirdo like me, or you just love nature, that they think this sort of aggressive mating behavior is part of why ducks have really interesting genitals. So the female has, so the male has a corkscrew shaped penis, and the female's vagina is swells in the opposite direction. So if his is a corkscrew, it's not going to have an easy fit. Their vaginas are purposely made to make it harder, or at least that's how it seems to have evolved. And this has, you know, been the discussion of a lot of different papers and science. And the idea is that it's an evolutionary trait to increase the hen's choice of male. So instead of being impregnated through rape, if we can use that word with animals, I am for the time being, let's just say that's what it is. If she could be impregnated that way, they're wondering if this development of the genitals means that she's less likely to be inseminated and have those eggs be fertilized by a rape situation, as opposed to her choosing a male and being relaxed and receptive during mating. Which, speaking of, I actually got to see the male mate with his female, and much to my hilarity, he fell off her at the end. He just sort of slid sideways and briefly was upside down with his little feet waving in the air. It was very, very cute. I will also say that when the hen realized that he'd won that fight where there were five additional drakes, she did a really interesting behavior where she followed her chosen male around, doing this weird side kind of head bobby movement. It looked very ritualistic, while making some interesting little noises, which really looked like she was following him, being like, oh yeah, that's my man. You know, he fought and he won. He's the best drake. It was very, very cute. So because of watching this whole drama unfolding in my back garden and knowing these weird facts that I do about their genitalia, I thought it was worth mentioning this week because I just find it fascinating, and I kind of hope you do as well. But moving on from ducks, let's talk about some other birds. Let's talk about chaos sprites, or, you know, chickens. So I'm hoping to get my fencing ordered within the next week, particularly since Cracker made it clear this morning that she wants to be out and she wants to roam. I'd really like to get it done before June, but that's kind of tricky. My husband has been absolutely slammed with work, and it's a two-person job, particularly with my back issues. So I have to try and schedule a time that he can help. So I'm really hoping maybe mid-June would be the latest, but we'll have to see. Spring has definitely arrived sooner than last year. This time last year, the trees were barely producing any leaves at all, whereas now it's just this beautiful green, verdant paradise out there. And I can see that the flock is getting restless. They can see the weeds and the grass growing and they want access to it. And I want them to have access to it. It's just that, you know, now I have to worry about everyone else's bloody dogs. So we'll have to see. I'm also very eager to get the fencing up for selfish reasons. A, because I like to watch them roam and it makes me happy. And B, because I've been considering whether I wanted to add geese to the homestead. And wouldn't you know it, but a adoption group not very far from me, within about an hour, has a bonded pair of male geese who are not aggressive with people, a little shy with them, but not aggressive, very good foragers, and have shown that they're very good defenders of their territory, which is why I want geese. I want the added flock protection. So I'm just like, oh, they're right there and they need a loving home. I could be that home. So we'll see. I'm trying to slow my roll. We'll need to do the fence first, and then I need to do a bit more information gathering about what kind of setup they're going to need, you know, how I can introduce them safely to the chickens and things like that. I would have them living separately from the chickens, but obviously I want them free roaming together. So I need to figure all that stuff out. If you have geese and chickens, I'd really love to hear from you about, you know, how they interact. I've heard that they tend to do quite well together with just a few exceptions, but I'm always open to your comments. Petal, my little chaos sprite from the last episode, who had that wound that I could never figure out, she's healing really, really well. She's basically back to normal. She still has her bare neck and tushy. I don't catch her pulling feathers, but she must be. And I'm planning on extending the run for their small special needs coop to hopefully be able to add more enrichment. And maybe if she has a larger space with more things to do and interact with, that it will curb this feather plucking behavior. Dahlia, her frizzle sister, is broody again. And I gave her 6 Orpington eggs. I would really like to raise like at least 1 Orpington a year to add to the flock, preferably 2 in case, you know, I get roosters, because I just love my English Orpingtons. They're harder to find. They're expensive. I want to be able to like produce my own. And I was able to work out which eggs are Fanny's. So Fanny is my lavender Orpington and my favorite hen. I think she's the most beautiful chicken in the entire world. And I really, really want to have some lavender babies. So I was able to figure out which eggs are hers. And I put 2 of them in to that little clutch of 6. And not long after the 6 were all together, I did some candling and it seemed like only 2 were viable. But as of this week, I'm pretty sure that all 6 are fertile and viable. And if my math is correct, I could be looking at babies as soon as next week. So within, you know, days, maybe a week or so, I could start seeing little babies. And if all those little babies hatch, I'm not keeping 6. I mean, even if they were all hens, I can't add that to the flock. Right now, it would just be too much and it would make their living conditions too cramped. So I will be selling them. And I'm actually kind of excited at the possibility of getting to sell chicks or pullets. It's not something I've done before. And I would be really, really happy to have my neighbors and my local community raising Orpingtons since they're my favorite breed. So fingers crossed that everything goes well there. And I have some healthy little babies soon. kind of related to babies. I am drowning in eggs. I might need to start advertising on Facebook or the Nextdoor app because I just don't have the space to store them. Part of the issue this week is that I have regular customers and they're either on vacation or they kind of are taking a break from needing that many eggs. You know, I've had people who do a lot of baking or whatever, and now they're taking a break from that, so they don't need quite as many dozen a week. So the usual sort of 4 to 6, sometimes 8 dozen that I was selling a week is not happening. So I'm sort of drowning in them. I already had to empty the egg money jar, and this year alone, I've already made almost $80. And this might sound like a lot, but keep in mind, up till this year, when I counted my egg money at the end of every year, it was like $100 to $125 for the full year of egg sales. I haven't changed my prices. It's just that now I have this younger flock. I have more hens. They're younger. They're more productive. I have less elderly to the young'uns. So yes, it's nice. It's nice to have the extra cash. But as always, if anyone's listening and they think they're going to make a lot of money by selling eggs, you're probably not. I mean, factory farms exist because it's only on these huge scales and having, you know, no ethics or care about your birds that you can really, really profit massively. If you wanted to make money off chickens, my recommendation would be actually to get some really nice breeds that are, you know, high in demand birds, kind of like Orpingtons, and, you know, get yourself licensed and start selling hatching eggs. I think you would have more success making a profit that way than just selling eggs as food. But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. I also actually, speaking about not changing the price, you know, it's been in the news a lot that egg prices are rising, and some areas, I've seen weird reports, like some areas are saying it's like $7 a dozen, which doesn't seem right to me. It's not that much here, unless you go for like the really frou-frou, and who knows how true it is, but you know, where they're like organic, free range, I don't know, tended by soft-handed virgins, you know, magical chicken eggs. Those can be about $5 to $6 here, but I have not seen anything up to $7. So I offer mine for $2 a dozen. I always have from day one. And actually right now with the egg prices rising, I'm really happy to keep offering them at that price. I kind of feel like it's just a really small way that I'm supporting my neighbors and supporting my community. I also had the realization when I was writing out some notes for this episode that I really need to check with my local food pantries because they might accept eggs. And if they do, I could just drop off my surplus every week and then I know it's going to people who really need it. So yeah, that's like, I don't know, it just makes me feel good to be like feeding people in my immediate area. So I'm very, very happy about that. And that's it. That's the birds and the bees, at least for this week. I don't have much more news. I am hoping, like I said at the beginning, that I will get all my plants and my seeds in the ground within the next week. I really, really want to get that done. I really want to harvest this year, like a very good harvest. It was so sad to like not really get any corn and not get squash and all that kind of stuff last year. So fingers crossed, I am spending every minute that I'm not, you know, doing animal chores or swimming or the million other things that I do, I'm spending that time in the garden, and I'm very happy to be there. Everything's just very joyous right now, and I'm really sort of reveling in it, and I hope it continues. And I hope wherever you are that the weather's treating you kindly and that you're finding joy in your property, your animals, everything that you produce and that you care for. And that's kind of it. So I will be back in a week, hopefully with more gardening news. And until then, I hope that you take care, that you will be healthy and happy. And as always, remember, hug your hens and then wash your hands. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back in a week. Bye-bye.